The CEO of Salesforce has recently announced the company has cut 4,000 customer support roles and replaced them with AI agents. Are we entering an era when technology service organizations are completely shredded by AI? I am Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I'm going to be joined by Shrikrishnan Ganesan, co-founder and the CEO of Rocketlane, a customer onboarding platform. Today, we'll be discussing the future of technology services. So let's get the insight engine humming. Welcome to Tectonic. And let's start here with just a little bit so the audience is grounded here. Rocketlane is a customer onboarding platform. What exactly is that so people understand?
Yeah, we define ourselves as a professional services automation and client onboarding or customer onboarding platform. This is really about any team or company that runs services projects to get technology implemented for their customers. That's who we go after as our ICP. So we provide a platform essentially that implementation teams, services teams of different kinds can run their projects collaboratively on with customers. We call it as doing both the back office and front office in the same platform. On one hand, the running the project, collaborating with customers, getting their feedback, sharing the insights and updates to the customer. All of that happens on the same platform as where the time tracking, the resource planning, the rate cards, project accounting, rev rec, invoicing, all of that as well.
Okay.
Then you bring the two together.
The whole life cycle. Okay, perfect. And so talk a little bit about how your platform is leveraging AI capabilities now. What are you folks doing there?
We have unique breadth to our platform already pre-AI in the sense that there's native documents, there's native surveys, forms, you know, collaboration capabilities, etc., even email sending capabilities. So our approach to AI has not been, let's just inject AI into what we're already building as a, you know, slap on or add on, but rather let's rethink our ambition as a platform. If we are today looking at how can we help plan the work, staff the work, manage the work, measure the work, communicate the work, that's what the platform does today. With AI, can we also help do the work? As one example, I would say when it comes to project communication and documentation work that typically teams need to do, this happens outside the PSA usually. Like Google Docs or Office 365 or wherever. But we are saying, hey, we have this AI note taker which joins your calls. It's not a regular note taker. It also, in addition to providing a summary and transcript from a conversation, it can also automate the documentation work that you need to do. Like, here's a requirements document template. Here's a solution document template. Here's a configuration document template, whatever else. Likewise for emails. Hey, here's a template for an email I want to send out after I go on an escalation call with a customer. So you can codify those templates along with sections within them that are powered by AI, where you can say, I want to draw information from different conversations I've been on with this customer and fill in the gaps in this, you know, document template or email template. I want to format it in this way. So that's one aspect. But then we are providing agents for every part of the project delivery journey, starting with requirements, as I said, but going on to the actual solutioning or the build and config or the testing work that needs to happen, the data transformation and migration work that needs to happen, the, you know, testing and validation that needs to happen later. How can we provide agents that assist in doing the work for each of these types of work that a services team typically does?
So Ian, how long have you been basically chipping on deploying those type of capabilities? Has it been in the past year, 2 years? Just give me a sense of what that journey's been like.
I would say our ambition grew this year.
This year, okay.
What we already had was like the AI note taker and documentation agent. But to get into doing all kinds of work, provide those agents, that's something we started work on early this year. We now have what we call AI fills. The documentation agent is already live for all of our customers. But the agents that do tasks as part of an implementation project or services project, that's something we are today, we've rolled out to 8 customers for different use cases. We will go GA with that in Q4. we're building it with a few customers to make them successful with it before we launch to everyone.
Yeah. So it's fascinating to me because the technology is moving super fast. Like you said, this is in a year, new capabilities are on the table. But I'm curious, any CEO of a software company now, it's super crowded, right? Every market area is super crowded. How do you differentiate yourself as a software provider in a world that operates like that now?
I think we are sort of lucky on this front in the sense that I think the way we are thinking about and framing the problem we're solving is very different from our competitors. In a way, I think this is what differentiates the companies that are breaking out in the AI first world is how has your ambition evolved as a company? I believe AI is helping one bring radical efficiency into how different departments or teams operate. Mm-hmm. And every team or department needs to balance that radical efficiency with growing their ambition. But even as a company, you need to do the same. And that's what we've done. When you look at PSA, Professional Services Automation as a category, there is a box that everyone puts themselves inside and says, here is what our software is supposed to do. It's supposed to help with the rev rec and tracking the time and, you know, resource planning and the project management. We've broken beyond that boundary and said, we are rethinking who we are, what our role is to play. And that's where we are differentiating. I think the other angle to differentiate really is, how can you be more and more all-in-one? And I feel even with AI allowing people to build more capabilities and features quickly, there is a certain complexity to thinking about how you become this truly unified solution that does a lot more than a regular, you know, point solution does. For example, we even have native sheets in our product. So documents, sheets, emails, to go with a PSA is not normal, even like CSAT surveys, etc. So how it all comes together, there is, I would say, the other differentiator that is emerging in the market today is taste for what is a good product, what should it feel like, what should it behave like. I think those are the areas where we are differentiating as well. Our taste for what's the right solution, building that all-in-one unified solution, rethinking the scope and what are the boundaries of your solution, that's our approach.
It's interesting as I listen to you because I believe strongly that these categories are blurring to what you just said. PSAs have been around for a long time. People have a box around that in terms of what is a PSA, what does it do typically to help with professional services automation. But those category lines between different, you know, types of software are blurring because you can build these capabilities in and people want an all-inclusive solution if they can find it. So I think it's going to be interesting times to watch how these markets start to evolve. But I'm curious, since onboarding is part of how you guys position yourselves and talk about it, talk about the importance of successful customer onboarding, how that impacts long-term customer value. Why do you folks feel that's so important?
I actually quote something that a prospect and a customer told me before rather than me coming up with my own way to talk about it.
Okay.
There's one gentleman who, as part of a sales cycle, was discussing and I asked him, why is this an important initiative for him? And he said, we treat onboarding as a second sale. So our sales journey doesn't end at, hey, we signed a contract. We believe that the customer is truly still evaluating us as they go through that the first partnership that they experience with us when we work together on onboarding them on our platform. And that is when they decide, hey, do we want to double down on this partnership and do more? Or do we want to find an opportunity to cut our ties at the first opportunity that we get? Might be 1 year down the line at renewal or wherever, right? And people make that decision based on the experience they have during that onboarding journey. I think the other great example that comes to mind is a customer gave me this example of what happens when you're going through a journey with a company. Let's say you had a great first experience with a partner, a new vendor. You then decide that, hey, this is a great partner to work with. And down the line, if there are issues, mistakes, problems that happen, you think of it as, oh, you know, usually these folks are really good, but they messed up this time. Let's figure out how to work around this. On the other hand, if you had a sloppy initial experience, the customer has decided that you're not a good partner to work with. The first mistake you make it's confirmation for them that, yes, I knew these were sloppy folks and they messed up as I expected, right? So that reinforcement happens when they already decided you were sloppy versus they make it an exception if they decided that you were a good partner to work with. And that judgment happens early in the journey when you're working together. So it's important to have the right governance over there. It's important to have the right intensity. And it's important to have the systems that enable this, right? Like, how do you productize that initial part of the journey so that those aha moments are being delivered as planned? You can sort of engineer the right high points to happen during that initial journey, ensure it's happening consistently for every customer so that everyone is treating, all of us will make mistakes somewhere down the line on a journey with the customer. People should treat them as exceptions and give us a second chance versus decide that, hey, this is not a partner we want to work with. That's a simple way to look at it. Of course, there are metrics and data points that people will, you know, people have to share about that. I've heard, I think 90% of all churn at first opportunity is decided during the first 3 months of engaging with a customer.
So that relationship. Yeah. So, you know, what I'm really curious about is one of the classic challenges with effective onboarding is the handoff from sales to services. So sales takes a customer through a sales cycle. It may be a long sales cycle, learns all kind of, you know, important things about the customer. Finally, customer's like, yes, I think you guys are the right solution, signs a deal, and then sales is gone and the service team comes in. And they may or may not have all that wealth of information, right, that the sales team was collecting for months. And so that's always been a pain point. And so tell me a little bit about how your approach at Rocklane is to close that gap down. How do you approach that?
I think there's two pieces here. One is just ensuring data in the CRM makes it and is properly available to the post-sale team.
Yeah.
But then also, since we are listening into all the calls, we also have an integration with Gong for the sales team is on Gong. And then we have our own note takers that join when you join a call. Now, take all of that as well and auto-document this sales handoff. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, we showed people, we have a conference called Propel that we do. We showed people at Propel how an AI-provided sales handoff looked like for our own team versus what AI created. Fact is, AI does a better job. And you complement that with what's in the CRM, I think you have a better complete picture for your team to go off on. So this documentation agent, one of the first use cases we picked up was actually this sales handoffs, how to automate it, including from multiple calls. Because usually a salesperson, when they're, or even SE, when they're documenting things, they remember what happened in the last two calls. They're not going to go and listen to all the calls that happened and document things the right way. Versus AI can tirelessly do that. Here's like four calls we went on. Here's the summary of the environment of the customer, what they stated goals were, what each person cared about, etc. Provide that. Probably even, you know, what I've learned is in many new AI tools we can be leveraging, let's say Gamma for making slides. Now, I can ask another AI agent to provide the right inputs to make a Gamma deck based on what we learned from the customer. So in addition to a document, I can also, you know, do half of the presentation work for my pre-kickoff call or alignment call with the customer before jumping on a full-fledged kickoff, saying, hey, here's what I learned. Is this accurate? Does this look good? With that, let's go into the kickoff call.
The use case you're on, I think, is such a great one because this is an area where I think AI does make our lives so much better because it can capture all that documentation. It can go back on lots of calls. It can provide those summaries. It can provide, and again, just makes those handoffs not so brutal in terms of all the work people. I mean, the reason it didn't happen is there was a lot of manual labor for somebody to capture that, get it here, whatever. And now, you know, the more that AI can assist there, the better. Are you ready for what's next in tech services? At TSI World Envision, we're bringing together innovative leaders from across the industry to tackle the biggest questions facing tech companies today. How do we harness AI? Not just a buzzword, but as a revenue engine. How do we reimagine the customer experience to drive growth in a digital-first world? And most importantly, are we ready to lead that change? Envision is where strategy meets execution, where data meets decision-making, and where the conversations that shape the future of our industry are happening in real time. Join us October 20th through the 22nd at the lovely Aria Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, you'll gain access to research-backed insights, proven frameworks, and real-world success stories to help your organization not just keep up, but lead. Register now at tsia.com/conference and walk away with clarity, tools, and the inspiration to turn today's uncertainty into tomorrow's opportunity. But, you know, the main thing I wanted to talk to you about was this sort of how services is evolving. And let's start with professional services. And you've already mentioned some of the capabilities you have in your platform that are helping, you know, requirements, testing, resource management. Tell me a little bit about how you see AI changing the way professional service operates. What are some of the, you know, the capabilities you're most excited about there?
Yeah, I think the big bet to make, I would say, is how do we shrink timeline of delivering on services?
Mm-hmm.
How do you reduce the cost, not towards, hey, I want to make more margin from services, but towards I can pass on the benefit to customers as well. Because when you shrink the timeline and cost,
yep.
When something that used to be 6 months and let's say $100,000 becomes, hey, this is now 3 week, 4 week, even 6 week effort, and it's going to cost $30,000. The appetite of customers to work with you, you know, is far, far more than what it was when it was a 6 month engagement. I'll give you two examples. There's a large public company in the database space who gave me this example. I'm not quoting them, but I think their talk is available on our website. They used to do these application modernization projects in the enterprise world, which used to take, let's say, 18 to 24 months. And they used AI. So these are just, you know, translating an application from an old stack to a new stack to also API enable it and so on to make it, you know, more valuable. They're also changing the database because it's a database company, but the value is from the overall app modernization. Now, because this is just a translation project, they were able to use AI to do the design and scoping, AI to use the actual development, AI to use do the testing, which really brought down the timelines from 18 to 24 months to 3 to 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would expect, oh, is their team going to reduce in size? They're actually growing from 300 people in PS to 600 people in PS because the volume of work has increased so much. And that is because now an exec is not thinking, my job is on the line if this project fails. Like a 2 year project has that impact versus a 3 month project.
Yeah, yeah. So you're on an interesting thread here because, I mean, so one of the big questions, and again, we'll just talk about professional services first. Project-based, labor-intensive, AI is coming in and absolutely taking labor off the table. You know, like you, everything you just described, taking six-month projects and making them 6 weeks. So there's a couple consequences. One is, hey, you know, I used to be able to charge a customer $250,000 for this, you know, project. Now I'm lucky if I can charge 50, right? So that revenue just poof, it went away. And I used to need X amount of people, now I need less. What you put on the table in what you're seeing, and tell me if this is your assertion, is that this is goodness in terms of both of revenue and need for professional services, because your expectation is this basically unlocks volume. The customers who before said, I don't have $250,000, or what you said, I don't want to take that risk on of a, you know, a long project. This is, you know, may or may not work. But if you're telling me it's 6 weeks and it's, you know, whatever, $50,000, I'm willing to place that bet. And so is that what you're seeing at Rocket Lane and what you feel sort of the future professional services is, expect shorter, lower cost projects, but expect volume to go up?
Absolutely. And I think when it comes to PS within SaaS and tech, what's also very true is today your PS team may be touching mostly new customers,
mm-hmm.
old customers, they don't have the appetite, bandwidth to take on more projects to, like, all our products are, we're like multi-product, multi-module. Old customers are still stuck doing things the old way in the platform. They haven't adopted more capabilities, and we don't have the bandwidth to go and spend time with them. Now here's an opportunity for you to go and offer more types of services, you know, shorter services, which help old customers as well, like existing customers, take on more of your platform. Hey, we can enable you to be using these three additional modules, and it's going to be like a 6-week effort. It's not what you thought it was going to be. It's not like we need to plan for 2 quarters to get you to adopt this new capability. We can do it quickly, right? So I think that is where the value stems from, is instead of touching 20% of my customers and just the new customers, can I go now and touch 70% of my customers each year and enable them to level up? Because you think of it, most of the churn that happens in the software, like SaaS industry, tech industry, is not for lack of capability, but the customer knows, hey, I don't have the bandwidth to level up and use all of those things.
Yeah, lack of adoption.
I might as well go and search for something new now. Or, you know, they're sort of giving up on evolving their implementation to adopt more. And here's an opportunity to make that very feasible and attractive.
So that leads to another question I had for you. And that is, so what you just described there is not only would you expect volume to go up for professional services, the nature of who they work with, instead of just working on the tip of the spear with the new customers, getting them up and going, there now is an opportunity to actually eat in a good way into the install base and help customers with, you know, ongoing adoption. How do you see the relationship between professional services and customer success potentially changing? Because, you know, that was one of the lines of demarcation, right? PS was sort of like the Marines. They come in, they land, they secure the territory, and then they leave. And customer success is like the Army, and they come and they camp out and they stay there. But now that, you know, that could be changing. What are you seeing there?
I think CS is becoming more commercial. And in that sense, yes, they may still project manage an adoption initiative, extra, but when they're trying to upsell, cross-sell capabilities, they may want to bring in PS again for, hey, let's do this 3-week project for this customer at a lower cost, but it's going to unlock so much more ARR for us because evolving the customer to use more of our platform. So I think that's going to happen. Secondly, interestingly, it's happening in our own team where CSMs are also now capable of vibe coding to make more things happen. In a way, I see AI as making more people full stack. So what I mean by that, in the development world, we have like a backend engineer, frontend engineer, then a full stack engineer that's both backend and frontend. I think for every department or function in our companies, we have people doing specific areas. Like, yeah, I have a product marketer versus I have a demand gen person versus I have a creative person in my marketing team. Guess what? With AI augmenting capabilities of people, all of them can be more full stack. The product marketer can make their own, you know, creatives and own potential campaigns. They may not be executing on those campaigns. They may hand off to someone else, but they can if they want to. Likewise, a demand gen expert can tap into the product marketing know-how and material and the brain of the product marketer with AI in a better way, easier way. So if that's happening in every function, post-sale is no exception, right? What used to be a PS person's territory could very well be something that a CSM also does now. Hey, I need to set up this config. Boom, I work with AI to get it done. I need to write a custom app for a customer. Guess what? Our CSMs are now writing custom apps. They've never coded before. So do we treat them as PS? I think there is that overlap that's going to be more apparent going forward. And we may have to rename, rebrand, reclassify the roles into, okay, this is more commercial, this is more delivery and outcome. You know, we're thinking about outcome architect as a role in the company where it's a combination of CS and PS people who are very focused on delivering capabilities versus, you know, there can be some folks who are more discovery and commercial oriented who fall under the account management side of CS. So I think those roles are getting redefined. I don't have all the answers, but definitely I think people are capable of doing far more things than they were able to.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've put several things on the table here. In fact, the AI is allowing an employee who might have been in a certain role, a CSM, you know, versus a professional service consultant, in allowing them to do more. And again, to these lines blur, just like we're talking about the software categories are blurring, the roles start to blur because people have just the ability to do things. And just help for the audience, you know, this concept of vibe coding is something that's out there, relatively new concept. But when you talk about CSMs vibe coding, just to describe for the audience what they're able to do there, what that means to vibe code.
Right. So, you know, many platforms have the capability for you to customize, build on top of what the platform offers. It could be through a marketplace capability or custom app capability or integration framework. And traditionally, you needed developers to build some of those things. It could be, you know, developers, consultants on the PS team who are writing scripts to enable some capabilities, build integrations, or even third parties who publish these apps in a marketplace typically, right? Gainsight has a marketplace, Salesforce has a marketplace, etc. Mm-hmm. Many platforms have. So we have our own marketplace too today. We haven't formally published the marketplace. We have the custom app development framework, which we've launched, where people can extend Rocket Lab. You can build capabilities at a project level, account level, workspace level on top of what we offer. So when a customer comes with a feature request, it's no longer about, I need to run to product to see whether you can prioritize it. If it's a simple enough thing, maybe the CSM can build it on their own. Now, you still need to have a council, an approval mechanism, so that you don't have a sprawl of apps that are managed. But I think that concept of there's a simple problem, let's discuss how we're going to solve it. Let's figure out the right approach for a custom app and then approve it. And anyone can build that app now. You don't need any development expertise. You need to understand how code works. You need to understand how APIs work. Uh-huh. But that's it. After that, you just need the internal drive, because guess what? Vibe coding, it starts off very easy. You're very impressed with the first output that comes up. But then to shape it into what you exactly want, it takes a bunch of iterations. Mm-hmm. It's not technical, but it needs that persistence to figure it out with AI.
We're going to keep discussing the future of services. And so, you know, one of the theorems out there is that, boy, these technologies used to be so complex. So you needed all these service people running around to implement it, to help drive adoption, to support it. But AI, these tools are easier to use. Customers can interact with it directly. We're not going to need all this service activity. In fact, we don't even want it, right? It's just like, again, if I can get rid of support people, like I mentioned at the opening here, if I can get rid of 4,000 support people and replace it with agents, that's better, right? And so there's one working theory that the future of technology is going to be much less service intensive. Let me put that on the table. What's your thinking about the future of that relationship of services to technology itself?
I think in the very long term, maybe. In the short term, I think there is a huge services opportunity because of AI. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I look at our own customer base, most of them are the AI-first companies, right? Like we have Vercel and Glean and all of these AI companies as customers today. Retool, right? Intercom, Finn. Yes, you can wish that AI deploys itself, but it doesn't. You still need a consultative approach. What is going to happen, I believe, in the short term is the consulting and PS work is more around deciding what to do, not doing. Mm-hmm. The problem discovery, figuring out what's the right solution, where is their ROI for the customer, what should we do first, what should we do next, all of that is going to be, you can still have all of that also aided by AI, where AI is proposing solutions, coming up with, here's my analysis of what you should pick. But humans decide what is the right thing to do, finalize things with the customer, get a sign off. And then they break down their activities into, here are things that I need to still do. Here are things that AI can help me get done and help me verify. So very much AI doing a lot of the work, but still a lot of services, because I think deploying AI needs perspective on what's the right thing to do. We saw, and everyone has talked about the 5% success rate of AI in the enterprise.
Oh, the MIT study. You know,
MIT study. A lot of that came down to, I think, picking the right problems to solve and, you know, the right integration approaches and whatnot, which needs consulting. So I feel PS is not going away. If anything, we have a momentary boost in terms of how much work PS can take on, because every product is becoming an AI product, which means you have more need for the right consulting to deploy it successfully. And there are tons of opportunities from a deploying AI in the enterprise perspective for services engagements. So I think that's the reality today. Will the services projects shrink? They should. Ideally, they should. The cost of those projects should shrink. The volume should grow.
So you said a really important thing there at the beginning of that, which is the fact that these AI native companies, they haven't been around for 15, 20 years, they're not a SaaS company, they're coming out right now, they're AI native, and they're coming to you and they need a in a sense, a PSA solution, because guess what? They have professional services. They need services to make their technology real. And, you know, if people missed it, there was an article talking about, you know, OpenAI, which is a massively unprofitable enterprise, just in a sense, selling access to a language model. They are discussing, you know, what's one way they get more profitable. They have their eyes on building a $30 to $35 billion professional service opportunity, which makes sense because, to your point, it's what makes that technology real and unlocks the value. And if you map that to the recent MIT article, and if anybody, there's no way you could have missed it because everyone's talking about it. MIT did this study, which was not a massive study. And I think it was more designed to be headline grabbing, but they're saying basically, you know, 95% of all AI, you know, implementations and enterprises are failing. I think that number is highly skewed because I've seen enough success within TSI members on AI that there's a lot of there. But the point that you made is if your AI initiatives aren't focused, you're not clear what you're going to achieve, and you don't have the right, I would argue, service wrapper around it, whoever you're working with, you're probably not going to get it across the goal line. So I agree with you. I mean, I think that there is a massive service opportunity here over the next X amount of years because these AI solutions are just not going to magically poof happen, you know, within these environments. Customers are going to need help. But I also, what you were describing there is the nature of those services, I also believe is going to be very different. Again, if we just focus on professional services, what they focus on, like you said, helping customers decide what they're doing, helping them with governance, helping them, it's different than the old days, which is my main job was just get the technology working. That was where all the brute force labor had to be. That's getting a lot easier. So I think it really does pivot the nature of professional services, customer success, et cetera, to be much more about value realization than about just standing the technology up. Every Tectonic listener is well aware, I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. And I'm curious, I'm going to chip on that one with you. In terms of the nature of what customers want, we also believe at TSIA, there is going to be more and more emphasis around the business outcomes, around not just, hey, you installed your software and it's working for me and it does. They're going to be really like, you're in the world of PSA. Hey, how much are you saving me on doing requirements? How much are you saving me on doing proposals? How much are you saving me on my resource scheduling, et cetera? That's what they're going to get very fixated on with their vendors. And I'm curious, you know, what you're seeing there.
Yeah, I think even the pricing model of AI products, there is an element that is more attached to ROI and outcomes for certain types of products. It's not uniform. I think all models are still being experimented on the tech side. But on the services side, definitely, I think there's going to be, here's the size of the problem. Let's quantify that. And hence, you know, here's the value of solving that problem. Yeah. And that's the kind of partnerships that people are going to sign up for, either just based on size of project, saying big, small, medium, here's like a fixed cost for it, or here is the outcome. So we want to take part of the price. If you're a consulting company, I want to be aligned with your ROI. Yeah. If you're a services team in a product company, maybe you're still doing it fixed fee. But, you know, milestone-based, milestone being tied to ROI, et cetera.
Yeah.
So those are the two types I see emerging. And there's also different types of teams that are coming together now. There's, of course, your Accentures, which are going to do a lot of the AI projects. But there are boutique AI-native consulting firms that have come up, whether it's a Distill or Andela or Turing, et cetera. they're now going and partnering with the large language models and other specialized AI companies to deploy their technology. And then the companies themselves, as you said, OpenAI, ServiceNow, whoever has AI capabilities, they're all launching their own consulting practices. And over there as well, there is an element of, we're going to have solution architects who guide on the right way to do things to these partners and customers. They may be a charged or non-charged resource, depending on stage of the company and what their priorities are. But that's one type of offering where there is a architecture and consulting around the right way to deploy the technology itself. Then there is what has now emerged as a very hot role in AI companies, which is forward deployed engineers.
Yeah,
it started with Palantir. Now you see it in OpenAI has FDEs.
Yeah.
Various agent focused companies have agent builder teams, agent product managers, agent engineers, and forward deployed engineers. Forward deployed engineers essentially are, in a way, extending the platform itself in addition to helping the customer with the right way to implement, deploy. They're also saying, hey, there are more capabilities that we need to build for our product for the customer to get to that value. So we will sit with the customer and we will build more product capabilities, which go back to help every customer benefit from it. It's not just this deployment, but we leveled up the product itself. So interesting role that's become super popular. Some of it is misnomer, some of it is real, but yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, I've spoken about Palantir in this podcast before. I mean, I think that they're a super interesting model to look at because, I mean, the contrast I would give people right now in the AI landscape is, you, again, look at something like OpenAI, who historically to date has just said, look, I'll provide the model, you know, I'll provide the technology. I don't think that's going to be a very exciting business model, quite frankly, for anybody. It's too commoditized, it's too competitive. And so the infatuation with just, you know, who's the one model that's going to rule them all, whatever, nobody. So I don't think that is an interesting business model. I think AI combined with the right expertise and service wrappers like a Palantir model is a very interesting, and it is profitable, right? And you are way more anchored on the outcomes, the value realization. And I think that's what it's going to sort of unfold here over the next 3 to 5 years, right? It's going to be less about just who's got the coolest model, and it's going to be more about who can really put the complete thought on the table to help a customer get the value. And that's where the game is going to be played. And I think there's going to be a lot of money made there, but the services stack, you know, is going to be an important part. And, you know, the way you and I cross paths, there's that article that was bouncing around LinkedIn about how AI is basically eviscerating consulting and traditional consultative type services. And I do believe that. I do see that. I mean, again, you know, just paying to go do a research report and come back with a, you know, a PowerPoint presentation, that business is gone. And so that's real, but it's not eviscerating the types of services we're talking about in terms of, you know, really close to the technology and getting the value realization. And so I think it's that pivot that technology companies and service professionals have got to keep their eye on here over the next couple of years. So, I mean, we're bullish on services, not negative, but I think there's, again, a lot of misinformation or hope out there that, you know, somehow these services are not going to be required. I just don't think that's going to be the future we're going into.
Yeah, I think that there's, as you said, class of services that will emerge, which can be fully delivered by AI. And there's going to be a class of services which are more involved from a human perspective. But the role of the human in any of these is going to also shift from what it is today to be much more thinking, value, architecture, that kind of stuff than I wrote some code, I did some config, etc.
Again, this is, I think, such an important theme for this audience. Is what gets lost in these headlines? Again, if you read a headline, it says Salesforce has, you know, removed 4,000 customer support professionals. You think that's the end of services. Like, you know, it's just going away, right? And we don't need education services because, you know, and we don't need this and we don't need that. And again, I think that loses the point because the higher ground is how, as we as a technology provider are going to deliver true business value, that is going to require a service component. In my mind, there's just no doubt about it. It's not going away. And these companies are designing their tech companies. They've got to have that as part of the stack, right? They can't just think I'm using AI to take out all this service noise. And I don't need that. So I'm going to ask you one final question. You know, as you think about moving forward, if you were advising other technology service leaders today, what would you be telling them for them to be competitive and them to be successful? What coaching would you give them?
I think the biggest thing I would say is you need to be in lockstep with where tech is in terms of what you're capable of using AI for in your own team today. Mm-hmm. And you need to be carving out a lot of bandwidth internally to experiment with AI and make step change in the way you deliver. Mm-hmm. Because we could be doing our firefighting day in and day out with the services projects we're on. We could be saying, okay, I'm going to just implement certain tools to bring efficiency. I'm going to do staffing better, you know, resource planning better, etc. But if you don't change how you deliver, if you're not doing internal hackathons, which people make breakthroughs in to say, okay, I built this internal tool that's going to help me. I think services companies always had this concept of accelerators, where they sort of productize some elements of what they typically deliver in a project.
Yeah.
Now, there is so much more of that that's going to happen, that needs to happen. And for you to guide your team on it, you need to be hands-on. You need to be understanding where things are going. So get hands-on, one. Almost, I would say, everyone take a 3-day or 1-week AI vacation, which doesn't mean a vacation from AI, but rather a vacation to just focus and play with AI and learn what's happening. And then come back and have the right asks of your team. Hey, why are we doing this manually today? Why not try this approach to do something with AI? And battle with finance this year to get bandwidth to say, hey, I'm not going to reduce headcount this year. I need more headcount, in fact, to focus on automation. You have GTM engineers in the sales side now who are doing all this, you know, work with Clay and other AI products to build automated workflows and capabilities and automated prospecting and whatnot. We need the equivalent in the post-sale world. We need many more internal tools to be built, which leverage AI. And you need to be building all those agents for ourselves so that next year we can look at how we can be radically more efficient. We can offer different kinds of services, etc. But you need to be investing now in that. You can't just be running your projects.
Yeah, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. And you know, our coaching to the companies we work with at TSA is just, you cannot stand still on this. You can't wait. You really do need to be experimenting, finding out where you can get leverage, because there is so much leverage already. Again, I've said this a million times on this podcast. There's so many proven use cases. And so not applying that and really innovating the way you're delivering your services is a big miss already. You've got to be taking advantage of that, because it's a different game for sure. So, well, I appreciate you coming into Tectonic today and sharing your thoughts on what you're seeing. Good luck, your rocket lane there. I always end here with a question of the day. So the question for our audience is, does software eat services, or does AI create a new services era? Thank you, everybody. Cheers. One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free.